Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to mikereinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
Hey everybody, on this episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show, we talk about the glenohumeral ligaments, we talk about wrist pain, and we talk about do barbell bent over rows put too much strain on the back?
The Ask Mike Reinold Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show. We're here answering your questions about rehab, fitness, sports performance, anything you guys want to talk about. So keep asking away. We got a ton of great questions in queue that we're still going through, so we're super excited about it. Today, joining me, we kind of got, we'll say, the usual crowd, I guess, for
I'm
now.
Back.
Today's red day.
I'm back.
We got some red shirts
there.
Oh, that's right. Dave Tilley is back.
I was in episodes for like 3 months.
Yeah, he's been off a while. So we have Dave Tilley here, Lenny Macrina, right? And then, geez, I've forgotten their nicknames. Evan Eleven.
Yes.
Evan Eleven and Sir Nix-a-Lot are here. And we have a special request today from the Gabenator. Oh. So the Gabenator tweeted at us and had a special request. That to determine which student gets to read the questions today, they have to physically arm wrestle.
Okay? Yes.
So not thumb wrestle this time, it's arm wrestle. So you guys get five seconds to arm wrestle and see who wins.
My money is on Evan.
Wow. Are you going to take that, Nick?
Oh, no.
Ready? On three. One, two, three. Go.
Over the top.
Oh,
get him.
Yeah.
Over the top. Get him.
Yeah.
Don't
explode.
Don't dislocate.
Explode.
Don't dislocate.
Oh, no.
It's
a turn of events.
Don't dislocate.
Don't. All right. Ding, 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 ding.
I'm waiting for like a viral video. Don't blow.
All right. Valuable lesson learned. Don't arm wrestle off the edge of a table because you didn't have a table to hit to end the actual match.
I saw it getting worse and worse.
This is hurting.
I think I almost blacked out.
All right. Evan leads it off. All right. He's out of breath, but what's the first question, Evan?
So, Matt from Jasper, Texas, he asks, why is passive shoulder external rotation sometimes more limited when the patient is at 0 degrees abduction than when the patient is at approximately 40 to 60 degrees shoulder abduction? And then he says, this happens often in post-surgical patients with sling use.
Okay, so why is sometimes 0 degrees of abduction, why is external rotation limited in that position? And he doesn't say that's like a common pattern. He just said, why could it be?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Well, you know, every aspect of the shoulder, like when you do external rotation at various degrees of range of motion of the arm, of like abduction, it's different portions of the capsule. So there's different structures that are being tensioned in different positions. So at 0 degrees is more superior aspect of the joint, and that's probably like the superior glenohumeral ligament, kind of the upper portions maybe of the middle glenohumeral ligament, but in that position there. And then as you kind of creep up, it's different portions. So it goes to the middle and then finally the inferior portion of the capsule. So, I mean, why is it limited at different range of motions? Well, it's like two different zones are tight or whatever it may be, right? So there's one. I think there's more, but what you guys want to add anything? I'm trying to think. There's probably...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the primary. The primary strain is superior glenohumeral ligament in that portion. And I think it's a Enfield thing, too. If you look at superior glenohumeral ligament versus middle glenohumeral ligament, you're going to feel more of a firm type endpoint.
That's a tough phrase.
Which one?
Middle glenohumeral ligament?
MTHL, right.
Soft tissue constraints, too. I mean,
correct.
As you elevate, you're starting to pick up more slack and other soft tissue, your lat, your teres, your subscap is starting
correct.
To become more so.
Right.
It could be partial to it, too.
Yeah.
And going back to his question, he said, why is he more limited at zero? And then mentioned post-op, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's subscap, too. I think, subscap is, especially with these procedures where subscap's involved, like even, open procedures or even just going through, the anterior aspect of the shoulder, you have subscap involvement. So I think that's going to be part of it. And then don't forget, that's the position they're sitting in all day.
Mm.
So they get super tight at zero because they're stuck in internal rotation in that sling position on their stomach. So I think that's just like inherently based on that. So I think that's the easy answer. That's why I didn't start with that. I think that's the easy one. Yeah. The secondary one, though, is that it is different portions of the capsule. Yeah. So if you've had, you know, some specific injury to the shoulder, I think it's just a different portion of the capsule. So, I talk about that a bunch on my website, I'm sure. So if you kind of, you know, look on my website and search around for the glenohumeral ligaments. If you look for that, I think you'll find some articles. I'm pretty sure I talked about that. I might have an Inner Circle webinar on that too, where we kind of go over those. But check that out.
I think one more thing is, if somebody posts off and you're doing motion at 0 degrees, I'd be very cautious with that, because you're putting more stress on structure that you probably that's going to put stress on the cuff too, and that's probably another soft tissue thing. Eletrash put a study out, I don't know, like 5-6 years ago, looking at strain on the anterior aspect of the cuff at 0 degrees of abduction, and showed you put a good amount of strain on the anterior aspect of the supraspinatus at zero. So I'd be cautious. I don't even do range of motion at 0 degrees. Everybody's at 45 or 90 because you start taking stress off the shoulder. So I just a little side note on that as well.
Bonus question.
Yeah, bonus.
Bonus answer.
Bonus answer.
Perfect. Awesome. See, we like to give back here.
We're philanthropists.
I like that. All right, what's number two, Evan?
Okay, number two is Shannon from Massachusetts.
She's from the entire state.
Great state.
She's a nomad.
That's why you skipped it.
Is it
Massachusetts?
Worcestershire.
We say everything weird here. Right. It's Worcester.
Worcester.
I've heard people say that.
It's a California guy.
I'm not sure how that came about, though. It's not spelled that way.
It does look like Worcester.
All right, so from Worcester, Massachusetts. I like how you tried to skip it.
That's why I skipped it.
All right, what is Shannon?
Her question is that she's a rock climber. She wants to know the difference between carpal tunnel and wrist tendonitis, and what are some tips to prevent re-injury after rest and recovery?
All right, so wrist pain in a rock climber. How can you tell if it's carpal tunnel or tendonitis? Sounds like you've been Googling stuff this.
Well,
so, that's good. So, Dave, you treat a lot of gymnasts, right? You work a gymnast. They must have a lot of wrist things, right?
Yeah,
When somebody has wrist pain, how do you differentiate between if it's carpal tunnel or a tendonitis?
Mm-hmm. So they tend to have different kind of symptoms, I guess, is the main thing. So tendonitis issues are more focal. You can kind of point to one spot and say, like, it's more of an ache or, like, an overuse type thing. Carpal tunnels tend to have repetitive, and they tend to start to get like some burning or some like traveling pain. It kind of like creeps into their hand a little bit, or sometimes it's different positions alleviate it. So if you are in this position, or you're in certain positions, and you're like, wow, I really feel it, but you're coming out of it and it can go away completely, usually that's more neurological tension. Versus, a wrist tendonitis tends to be like your hand could be in a certain position. If you squeeze a muscle a certain way or provoke it, doesn't matter where you put your hand in space, it kind of always lights it up a little bit. And I would say the other one too is you can check different tests with, I guess, manual muscle testing versus like a nerve tension. So if somebody has a carpal tunnel and you can provoke it with end range, or I guess rock climber, you could be like at that end reaching position, certain ways you put your hand could provoke it, versus that's probably not going to happen in a wrist tendonitis. You're not going to get that like kind of burning sensation in the nerve stretch.
Yeah, I like how you ended it there too. It's a different type of pain too. Mm. Carpal tunnel usually a little different feeling, you know, for those that I'm sure have had a tendonitis or an epicondylitis or something, you know what that feels like. Carpal tunnel just feels different.
Yeah, and a similar bonus thing is that I've found a lot of carpal tunnels are not carpal tunnels. They're more up the road. They're kind of definitely caught up in your neck or things like that. So some people are typing at their computer and they're like, my carpal tunnel really hurts, but they change their neck position and alleviate it and it goes away. So
yeah. Bonus number two.
You have to have a third bonus.
What a day.
Today. You have to give another one.
What a day. Totally agree, though. All right. What's number three?
All right.
That was answered so well. Let's just move on. That was fantastic. Dave Tilly in the house.
I had two months to think about it, so I'm back.
That was your first question in a while.
Okay. Last question is from Brad. He wants to know...
Where's Brad from?
It doesn't say.
I don't trust his reading style.
Brad, May 15th.
I believe you. Brad's from Twitter. That's why. What's Brad's handle on Twitter?
At bmarlow42.
Bmarlow. I like it.
Bare metal.
Okay. So, last question. Are bent over barbell rows a good exercise, or does it have too much shear force on the spine?
Oof. That's two questions. So there's maybe the bonus right there. Mm. Are bent over barbell rows a good exercise? I would say yes.
Yeah.
And then two is, do they have too much stress on the spine. Is that what he said?
Shear force.
Shear force. Wow. Okay. Shear force even better. So yes. The question is just what's too much.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, stress is stress. Everything's stressful, right? Like me sitting here is stressful. Me picking something off the ground is stressful. So every exercise has stress. So if we were to compare a bent over barbell row compared to, let's say, a unilateral row or even like an inverted row, I think there's differences in the EMG activity that you're going to get in your paraspinals, in your lats even, and stuff like that, your core musculature. It's going to all be different between the three. There's been some recent research in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research that's actually shown that inverted rows have a higher amount of lat activity, and unilateral has a higher amount of oblique, obviously, makes sense. And then bent over barbell had the highest amount of lumbar paraspinal, which is like one of those like duh comments, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, this is exactly what we thought it would. So it really depends on your person here. I think bent over barbell rows are super easy to screw up.
Yeah, that was my comment.
You could just do it with poor form.
Overextended.
Or more importantly, I bet a lot of people don't have the ability to get into the right form. I don't think I personally do. Hip hinge is a definite big part of it, but like my hamstrings are super tight. I'm a super tight hamstring guy. So for me to get in that, imagine the position I'm going to get into if I put my hamstrings at a completely lengthened position and try to load my back. And what we're doing is we're using a barbell, which means I can load the crap out of it, right? Like we can really get aggressive with that and really put, you know, bilateral movement on there. So am I going to stress the back? Well, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to stress the back and it's going to be more. But for me, it's all in that spectrum. It's very appropriate for people at the right time if you can get into that position. But heck, me with my tight hamstrings, I'm going to struggle to get there. So then my low back's going to take over. I'm probably going to be more of a posterior pelvic tilt. So again, my low back's going to be at a disadvantage. Heck, yeah. Jeez, sorry, I went off on that one.
That was good. That was
a very emotional
question. I don't think a bonus thing. I think the moral is there's probably maybe better things you can do. A little
safer,
Let's not say better. Though,
right.
That's the rehab perspective. The rehab perspective would say better. That's fantastic for you if you want to get to that point.
I think good and best is relative to your goal.
Right.
So if your goal is to, you need a barbell and that's part of your sport, like Olympic weightlifting, then that's a great exercise for you. But if you're someone who's just trying to be healthy and go about, maybe we split it up and do some sort of, you know, anti-flexion with a row or with a unilateral thing and two exercises to maybe make it more effective for you to get in a better position.
Yeah. And to go back to Lenny's comment too, essentially, there's many regressions. There's many other things you can do and do quite well. So,
right.
I think it's a great exercise. You just got to be the right person at the right time, I guess, which is kind of like every exercise, right? So
it depends.
Yeah, lots of bonuses on this episode. So.
We should be the bonus episode.
Yeah, we'll call this the bonus episode.
Special prize in size.
Thank you, everybody. We appreciate it. Another great episode. Keep asking us questions. Go to MikeReynolds.com and click on podcast. And, keep asking away. We want to keep going with this. So do that. Give us a hand and get on iTunes and give us a nice review and a rating. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeReynolds.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeReynolds.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.